now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation that is facing a great choice coming up in November. And yes, it will be a choice between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And yep, there are some people who may choose Robert Francis Kennedy, but no one believes that Robert Kennedy, whose name won't even be on the ballot in most states, has a chance of actually winning the election. There is a new piece in Politico magazine about how Kennedy's campaign could be doom for the Biden presidential hopes. Why? Because he seems to have, Robert Kennedy, a special appeal for Latino voters based upon his father's friendship years ago with the late farm workers leader Cesar Chavez. We will get to that issue. There is no further threat of no labels throwing yet another third-party candidate into the wings, into the arena, because they have just announced that, no, they are not going to spend any of their war chest. They're not going to spend any of their resources. They're not going to desecrate the memory of the founder of No Labels, or one of its principal founders, the late Joe Lieberman. May his memory be a blessing, by lousing up the election with another candidate who can't win. But one of the key issues that is going to end up on the ballot, and that I think is going to sway many voters, is the issue of January 6th and the idea of a stolen election. And the idea of whether or not President Trump is justified in promising to grant pardons to people that he considers hostages, political prisoners, very great patriots, and heroes. And as a matter of fact, in his recent rallies, President Trump has begun not only describing the January 6th criminals as heroes and patriots, but actually featuring their voices singing the national anthem. And as he stands there with his hand over his heart, praising these particular convicted criminals, and many of them pleading guilty, and praising them for their patriotic commitment. It's an extraordinary thing. Do most Americans agree with that? There are some Republicans who do. There are virtually no independent voters or Democrats who do. The political guru who helped President George W. Bush win two very hard-fought, close elections in 2000 and 2004, Karl Rove was engaged in a live forum together with MSNBC's Ari Melber. And he made a very powerful and potent point that Trump was harming the fate of the Republican Party, and certainly was harming President Trump's own chances of victory, by focusing so much attention on the January 6th prisoners and promising again to pardon most of them, President Trump has said. This is Karl Rove speaking in California. Listen.
If they were smart, they'd take the January 6th and go hard at it. And they would say, he wants to pardon these people who attacked our Capitol. I worked in that building as a young man. To me, the Congress of the United States is one of the great examples of the strength of our democracy and a jewel of the Constitution. And what those people did when they violently attacked the Capitol in order to stop a constitutionally mandated meeting of the Congress to accept the results of the Electoral College is a stain on our history. And every one of those sons of who did that, we ought to find them, try them, and send them to jail. And one of the critical mistakes made in this campaign is that Donald Trump has now said, I'm going to pardon those people because they're hostages. No, they're not. They're thugs. There were people, some of them had automatic weapons at a hotel in Virginia hoping to be able to be called up. We had people saying, where's Nancy Pelosi? We had people who were, you know, taking desks and sitting at the desk of the Speaker of the House and attempting to, you know, find people in order to bring them to justice and saying yelling at the police, kill them all.
Okay, there is a new book that is a... offers a portrait of many of these criminals and their fates and how they tried in some cases to flee from arrest after the riot of January 6th. The book is called Sedition Hunters. We're going to be speaking to its author coming up on the Medved Show. And Karl Rove went on to say on this very sensitive and, yes, explosive subject, to say this.
And so why Trump has done this is beyond me. If he had said, you know what, I trust our jury system, I trust law enforcement, anybody who assaulted the Capitol ought to be, I mean, he said it once or twice, but now he's appearing in a video with people who assaulted police officers with an intent to take the Capitol by force. So, you know, look, I'm a Republican. I don't want to have a Democrat president. I want to have a Republican president. But we're facing as a country a decision, and everybody gets to make it, as to what kind of leadership we're going to have. And to me, it is a mistake on the part of the Trump campaign to allow the president's impulses to identify himself with the people who assaulted the Capitol rather than people who stand for law and order. Yeah.
Look, that is a powerful declaration, and it goes with a news story today. A Missouri ex-Proud Boy who wore a cap that said right-wing death squad when he raided the Capitol on January 6th has just been found guilty. A Southeast Missouri man with ties to the Kansas City area Proud Boys pleaded guilty yesterday to two felonies involving the Capitol riot, and he was found guilty by a judge on a third felony count. His name is Nicholas Kennedy. He's 43. No relation to the political Kennedy family. And Kennedy's sentencing has been scheduled for August 28th. He faces a likely sentence of between 18 months and 24 months in prison, but he could be subject to a maximum of 20 years in prison on two of the felony charges. He must also pay $2,000 in restitution for damage to the Capitol, which the government says totaled more than $2.9 million. Kennedy's conviction comes nearly 3 years after his arrest, as January 6th defendants are hopeful that the former president, Donald Trump, will win the November election and issue a pardon to the rioters, whom he refers to as hostages, political prisoners, and very great patriots. Much of Kennedy's hearing Tuesday of this week involved prosecutor Jason McCullough laying out the evidence behind the plea deal. On January 6th, Kennedy met up with several Kansas City area Proud Boys outside Harry's Bar, a now defunct dive in downtown Washington, D.C. He got a piece of orange duct tape from one of the Proud Boys and put it on his black baseball cap, which had the letters RWDS on it. The letters are an acronym for Right Wing Death Squad, a phrase dating back to the 1970s that has been used in recent years by far-right extremists. More on just who the heroes, hostages, political prisoners are who are in jail for the January 6th riot. That coming up with Ryan O'Reilly of MDBC. We'll be right back. Yeah! And on the Michael Medved Show, I am very proud to welcome to the show Ryan Riley, who is a justice reporter for NBC News. He is also the author of a book that was selected by Publishers Weekly as one of the best books of 2023. That book is called Sedition Hunters. And it's really about the people who President Trump calls hostages, political prisoners, very great patriots, and American heroes, people who are currently in jail. And the book is really not about only about who they are and why they are in jail, but how they got there. And the people, many of them civilians, who've actually invested a great deal of time and energy in seeing that justice is done for the literally hundreds of people who attacked the Capitol building on January 6th. Ryan, if I can begin with a basic question about this whole issue, and the book's Sedition Hunters is posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com. The very heart of the complaint that President Trump makes again and again and again, and that people that I know who express sympathy for the rioters from January 6th, the core complaint is that they have been singled out for specially harsh treatment, that for some other people without the political agenda that these rioters shared, for people who simply threw things at police officers and carried banners and chanted "Hang Mike Pence," they wouldn't get the same kind of very serious penalties, in some cases years in prison, that these people got, and that they were harshly treated and unfairly treated simply because they shared with President Trump the conviction that the election was stolen and wanted to do something about it. Do you believe that most of these folks have been treated fairly by the legal system?
You know, I think looking through these cases, I would say that one thing that I don't think that a lot of people recognize is that people frequently get sentences of probation off of these lower level defendants who are facing misdemeanors, who plea out, or even sometimes individuals who chose to go to trial and are convicted at trial ultimately receive probationary sentences. Now, you know,
meaning that they don't serve any time in prison.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah, that's like a routine occurrence. And I think the reason that really hasn't broken through is because, you know, it's tougher to write a headline about that, right? Like, if somebody gets a probationary sentence, I'm probably not writing an independent story on it unless it was a really high profile case for some reason. So I think that that just hasn't broken through for people. And people see some of the longer sentences that have been handed out to some of the more violent offenders and think that that's the case for everyone. But, you know, the Justice Department does not get what it wants. Typically, in these cases, typically judges are really undercutting what the Justice Department goes for. But I think, you know, step back, big picture wise, the reason that there's been such an, you know, people aggressive posture to this is, for one, it was the U.S. Capitol, right? It was this unique incident, but also, like, just jurisdictionally, that's sort of the FBI's domain, like, right? Like, no one else could investigate that. And if there was a riot in the city that took place, and, you know, some 7-Eleven got broken into, or a liquor store, or what have you, that is that the investigation that goes into that, absent outside of a few particular individuals, perhaps if they were involved in arson, like, who is responsible for that? That's local prosecutors who are in charge of those cases. Jurisdictionally, this is something that is right in the Justice Department's, this is at the core of what the Justice Department is about, is holding people who commit federal crimes accountable. And that's what this is at the core, is a federal crime. So a lot of these cases are prosecuted also just because they made it a lot easier for themselves to be caught, because they went into the Capitol with, you know, their face fully available to anyone who was taking photos or videos. So it just made people a lot easier to identify, right? This attack took place in broad daylight, so it's a lot easier to identify people, especially people who are bragging about their crimes themselves on their own social media profiles.
And again, President Trump continues to assert that people should be proud of the way they behaved on January 6th. It's not something that people were attempting to hide, but this is something I learned from your book. The book, again, is called Sedition Hunters. There were a lot of people who, after the riot fell apart and broke apart and people went home, realized they might be facing some legal difficulty and tried to run away or to hide. How many rioters are the authorities still looking for, still tracking?
Well, you know, in terms of fugitives, people who were arrested or charged, you know, publicly, there were a few who actually, and those are some of the pretrial detainees. And, you know, right now there's only about 15 people who are being held pretrial out of, you know, more than 1,300 who are charged overall. And the reason I sort of focused on them was because those are the individuals who haven't been convicted by either a judge or a jury, right? So they have not actually been convicted of the crimes that they are charged with. And that's sort of how our system works, is that a judge can make those determinations. They can appeal it, but they can only be held if a judge finds reason that they are a threat to the public or that they there's risk of flight. And so several of those individuals who are being held were determined to be a risk of flight because they fled before. Three people hid out of the compound in Florida. One of them, the FBI never arrested. And then two others who were along for the ride with him had skipped out on their trial, which was supposed to take place last summer. So when the FBI got them back in January, obviously the judge decided to lock them up because they had previously fled. They had illustrated that they couldn't be trusted. But a lot of the other individuals who are being charged or who are being held pretrial, those 15 I write about in my piece at NBC Today, are individuals who really are charged with extremely serious crimes. And it's something that I don't think a lot of people recognize, some of the really horrific attacks that took place.
Okay, what are the most serious crimes?
So the three that I really would highlight is someone threw an explosive device inside the tunnel where officers were being assaulted. So that individual is being held. That explosive device went off. Officers lost hearing for several days, for several hours. They had ringing going through their ears for days or hours, they said. It was really this event where officers told the FBI that they thought that they were going to die. They thought that was lights out for them when they were under assault from this brutal mob, and they thought that was it when that bomb went off. Another incident involved someone who shot a gun twice in the air on the west side of the Capitol amidst all of this chaos and rioting, and the footage of that incident actually really didn't emerge until a couple of months ago, and that individual was only actually arrested last month. There's also an individual who was the fourth person inside the Capitol, went through a broken window, helped break open that window, then forced open a fire door. That individual is named Edward Kelly, and he was actually released after his initial arrest on January 6 charges, despite having been seen on video assaulting an officer. But then months later, he was rearrested for the FBI, and the reason he was rearrested is because the FBI alleged that he was plotting to kill the FBI agents who were investigating him. So really,
okay, well, if you can hang on, Ryan, we're speaking to Ryan Riley, the author of Sedition Hunters, and we'll meet a few of the other hostages, as they're called, or political prisoners of the January 6th riots, coming up on The Medved Show.
Michael Medved.
The book is called Sedition Hunters. It was chosen as one of Publishers Weekly's best books of 2023. And it was about the events of January 6th, 2021, and the aftermath of those riots and the perpetrators of those riots. And by the way, Ryan, we're talking about some of the individuals. You talked about Daniel Ball, who was charged with assaulting law enforcement and throwing this explosive device that actually damaged the hearing permanently of some of the police officers and some of the law enforcement personnel who were trying to defend the Capitol building from his assault. How long was Daniel Ball sentenced to serve, in prison.
He hasn't been sentenced yet. He's one of the individuals who is being held, you know, pre-trial, that a judge determined that that he should be held until that, you know, until his trial or until he takes a plea deal. So, you know, but I mean, I think if you want to get a sense of the sentences, some of the longer ones, you know, the longest one was 22 years, which was given to Enrique Tarrio, who was convicted of seditious conspiracy. He was the leader of the Proud Boys. And some of those longer sentences were given to the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. But probably more of a more, if you will, sort of run of the mill defendant, not necessarily in the mean of cases, but one of the more serious defendants who wasn't part of one of those groups like the Oath Keepers or the Proud Boys was Danny Rodriguez. He's a Trump supporter from California who actually drove a stun gun into the neck of Officer Michael Fanone after he was abducted by the mob at that tunnel on the west side of the Capitol on January 6th. And he was given 12 and a half years in federal prison. We typically see, you know, for these more violent offenses, like a lot of sentences around that sort of gather around 7 years is where I think we see a decent amount of sentences. Another sort of 4 years are handed out fairly frequently. But, you know, a lot of the even people who committed violence are sometimes getting sentences of, you know, a couple of years. There's an individual I can think of who I think got a year. And so a lot of these less serious offenses are not sort of these lengthy prison sentences. They're sort of, you know, can be measured typically in months rather than years.
Okay, Ryan Riley, you probably know more about these prisoners and about their cases. And one of the things that is striking in your book is it turns out that, yes, there are some people here who have had sort of knockabout lives and people living in their cars or not making a living. But there were also successful professional people and people who were pillars of their community. What do you think people expected when they marched up to the Capitol after Trump had urged them to do so peacefully and patriotically? What did they actually expect would happen or that they would accomplish by rushing at police officers and coming into the Capitol building and defacing it?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of them are really worked up. A common phrase that we hear over and over and over and over again at these sentencing hearings is mob mentality. I was caught up, right? That's what we often hear defendants saying. And I think that, you know, people who actually thought the election was stolen, it made sense to them that something should be done about that. So when they got sort of really worked up at the speech and headed over to the Capitol, that's what ended up happening. The mob mentality, I do think for a lot of folks, really did take over. They thought that this was the end of the country, that, you know, China was taking over, that, you know, that Joe Biden had stolen the election, et cetera. This was the end of America. This was 1776 2.0 in their mind. So, you know, a lot of them really did lay it on the line that day because they thought that this was their last opportunity to save the country. And, you know, some of them, it's interesting to hear afterwards at these sentencing hearings where some of them, you know, finally, I think the lights have gone on and they've recognized, you know, reality and recognized that they were tricked and fooled by these conspiracy theories online. But there's a lot of people who still believe that the election was stolen even today and continue to believe that in, you know, and even say that during their sentencing hearings altogether. They hold themselves out as political prisoners and think that, you know, the Joe Biden regime, as they'd call them, is really going after them. But,
The other question that is very pressing is that we played before some of what Karl Rove had said recently, and loyal Republican that he is. Do you actually believe that if President Trump wins this election, he would go forward and pardon a lot of these prisoners that he's talking about?
I think we would see a lot of pardons. He said that over and over again. The question to me is sort of where that line would fall, because I would still think that there would be some consequence for him pardoning individuals who are on tape just brutally assaulting law enforcement officers. But I could see him definitely shaving some sentences potentially. It depends sort of, I think, who gets his ear, right? Like right now he's boosting a song of him sing, you know, a song of writers who are locked up in the D.C. jail singing, you know, national anthem along and undercut with audio of him. He's playing at his rallies. So I think it really is whoever gets his ear and whoever sort of says the last thing that is going to sort of rule the day here. So it sort of depends on what the political situation is like if he comes back to office.
Yeah, and he has given no sign so far that he means to retreat on any of this. Do you think that there will be a point when we will be able to have some kind of national consensus where there won't be this powerful indication and sympathy for people who did attack law enforcement officers, and that maybe more people will realize that there's a contradiction between being the party of law and order and for supporting and expressing sympathy for people who attack cops?
Yeah. You know, I'd like to hope so, right? I mean, you know, if you're in journalism, you kind of have to hope that people will be able to get to a shared reality at some point on this. But, you know, I certainly, there are definitely cases where I feel a lot of sympathy for some of these individuals who really did get swept up in all of this in terms of just being overtaken by these conspiracy theories. And, you know, especially for a lot of the children who are now going to be left fatherless for potentially several years because one of their parents chose to take part in some really horrific violence because they couldn't separate reality from fiction on the internet, right? They got swept into these conspiracy theories. They really believed them, and they threw away good portions of their lives because of what they did that day. I'd like to hope that there's going to be sort of more of a shared reality about this. But unfortunately, there's a lot of conspiracy theories being spread about that day and about who these defendants themselves are and who's being held behind bars.
Well, that's why where your book, Sedition Hunters, comes in. Are some of the people imprisoned still true believers in QAnon?
There's definitely a lot of QAnon believers. Even one QAnon guy who chased an officer up the stairs towards the Senate while wearing a QAnon sweatshirt. I remember sort of like, you know, reading one of these interviews that he does. I mentioned it in the book where, you know, he's asking, like, are there enough prison cells to, you know, hold all the people that you're going to arrest? He still thought that this was all sort of, you know, that basically the FBI was maybe going to arrest all of Trump's enemies, yada, yada. And even after he was released, he couldn't stay away from some of this sort of conspiracy theory content. He was using like an old phone to stream Mike Lindell videos, right? Like that's what he was obsessed with. He couldn't really let go of it. It's really an addiction for some of these folks.
The book is Sedition Hunters. It's fascinating. Whichever side of all these various issues you come down on, this is a book full of drama, emotion, and enlightenment, it seems to me, ultimately. Ryan Riley, thank you for joining us. We will be right back with something about, well, Sean Penn, an old movie and a new one coming out. That and more on the MedVet Show. And on the Michael MedVet Show, don't forget you have an opportunity to get at half price a subscription to become a MedHead. Gives you access to the podcast version of this show 24/7 on demand. The cost to you, because it's 50% off the regular price, $2.50 a month. Pretty amazing, really. And you can get a MedHead Plus membership, which gives you access to everything in the MedVet History Store whenever you want to download it and listen to it and enjoy it. That is also 50% off, which comes to, well, less than $5 a month. Very much worth your checking out. Go to michaelmedved.com, use the code name MedHead, and you can take advantage of these very special prices. Okay, an email came in from Scott in Seattle, and it was in response to a conversation I had with Tom Nichols, who for 25 years had taught at the Naval War College. He's a professor of emeritus there. And we were talking about his book, which has just been re-released in a new edition, which is called The Death of Expertise. It was basically about how Americans, and partially because of populist conspiracy theories, don't trust experts anymore. Anyone who seems to be, or sometimes is, an expert in some kind of field is viewed as elitist and out of touch with reality. And Scott sends in his email from Seattle, and he says, it's not Trump telling or leading people as far as COVID-19 handling is concerned. It's just common sense and self-preservation, informed consent of a free people. You and Tom Nichols have participated in doing great damage to America. Uh-oh. You couldn't possibly know more than very little. Who could, which experts, know enough at these nascent developmental stages of mRNA, of the so-called COVID vaccine's efficacy, weighed against the risk? And the risk could be very long-lived. Yet, to summarize, instead of deferring to a free people's sense of informed consent, you and Nichols are doing nothing so much as dividing the people of the United States. I think it's the opposite, frankly, that is the goal, the opposite of division. It's actually bring people together. And understanding that on some issues, yes, there are questions of informed consent, and we weren't even talking about any of the rules or any of the required mandated vaccines or any of that. That's not the issue. The issue is paying attention to people who have spent a lifetime trying to deal with issues of health and public health and well-being of the people of the United States, and respecting it. And this goes for law enforcement. It goes for the legal system. It goes for every aspect of science. Generally, if there is a very strong consensus about a scientific question, as there was about COVID-19, people benefit from expertise. And by the way, one of the things that is very striking about the pattern of where, in particular, people suffered more disproportionately from COVID-19, that tends to be places that were very negative about the vaccines. Places where the vaccines were not taken up. Vaccines worked. And again, President Trump and Tom Nichols said this on our interview, that of all of the different things that President Trump did that were controversial, one that shouldn't be controversial at all was Operation Warp Speed and developing the vaccines. But to acknowledge that, one has to really acknowledge that the vaccines worked in reducing the chances of serious illness and death, which is why we may be conscious of the pandemic right now, but the rate of death and suffering is far, far reduced. Coming up tomorrow, there is a very, very grim, hard-hitting movie that we're going to be reviewing, which is coming out tomorrow everywhere. It's called Asphalt City. And the original title of the film was Black Flies, which I think somebody in the marketing department said, yeah, it's going to a movie called Black Flies. Maybe people aren't going to want to spend their $12 on going out to the movies to see Black Flies. We'll call it Asphalt City. In any event, it stars it stars Sean Penn. But it's worth looking back to some of his range of work, because this is a very grim, realistic work. He also starred in a movie some years ago called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It's really 2013. It's reviewed right here.
Now, it's time for Medvid on Movies.
Ben Stiller plays a quiet, shy, hardworking guy who has a wild fantasy life in his daydreams in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
What is it you call it when he goes into one of his little places?
Oh, zoned out.
What's the matter?
I lost the picture.
You should go. Crack the case.
That's Kristen Wiig, a co-worker of the title character, who he's desperate to impress, as his reality suddenly overtakes his fantasies when he chases a missing item at work into a wild adventure in Greenland and Iceland.
Where do we land?
Weirdo!
Hey, man, where are you now?
Himalayas. I'm going to keep this short. I have to make oxygen choices.
Life is about courage and going into the unknown.
And the original story, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, is hardly unknown. It first appeared in 1939, and then there was a popular film with Danny Kaye. But this Mitty is different, more serious, romantic, and touching than anyone would suspect. There's also a redemptive theme about blurring the line between imagination and real life, plus an intense and effective cameo appearance by Sean Penn as a mysterious, eccentric, globe-trotting photographer. Some of the plot twists are definitely hard to believe, but these well-acted characters are also hard not to like. It's rated PG, with a few scenes of menace and danger, but appropriate for all but the very youngest viewers. 3 stars for The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. No secret, it's one of the feel-good movies of the year.
And that's kind of the opposite of the movie we'll be reviewing tomorrow with Sean Penn in the starring role, not just a supporting role. That film is called Asphalt City, and it's about the brutal, difficult, sometimes self-destructive profession of EMT, emergency medical technician, people who are paramedics working for the fire department of New York. It also stars Ty Sheridan and